And now, live from Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is the WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari.
Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man, Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Yes, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Countdown for blastoff. X minus one.
Richard Diamond, private detective.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
About 8 minutes after 11 p.m. here on a Sunday night. January 15th, 2017. This is program 146 in the WGN radio series. I'm your host, Carl Amari. To my right in green is Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
Hi, Carl. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
Mike Gastella, who is on the A-list, is here.
What's up, Mike? How are you doing?
What's going on, Mike? How are you?
Good to see you.
Yeah.
Good to see you
as
well.
Can I have your autograph?
Sure, maybe a little bit later.
And then Elif Garris is in the booth taking care of all the buttons, whistles, controls, call screeners. She does it all. She's like an octopus in there. Or octopi. You're like more than one octopus, an octopi. What's going on?
An octopi?
Yeah.
I'm on the A-list, but I show up both nights.
Ah,
the A-list.
See how that works? Very, very good.
How are you guys?
I'm good. Weren't we here like 20-something hours ago?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. We just don't leave.
Well, we have classic radio shows for you all the way to 2 o'clock in the morning. We're going to start things off with The Whistler, one of the best mystery series of the golden age of radio. Then it's one of the best comedy series of all time, The Jack Benny Program. Then it's a newspaper drama on the big story, true crime case. You won't want to miss that. Great lineup tonight. Stick around. It's all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars in the upcoming TV series Ice, about a diamond dealer in the treacherous world of the diamond business. Did you know the diamond business was a treacherous world?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I bought a diamond once, and
once.
It was very treacherous.
Didn't work out real well for
that.
You. No, I didn't think so. And if you are the winner, you will get two tickets to see Tony and Tina's wedding, playing right now through April 29th.
All right. The number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. He's Kiefer's father, and he played Mr. X in JFK.
I know Alan Dulles very well. I briefed him many a time in his house. But for the life of me, I still can't figure out why he was appointed to investigate Kennedy's death, the man who had fired him.
Who is that famous actor? Give us a call, 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this break.
Welcome back. You found us. This is the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it again.
I know Alan Dulles very well. I briefed him many a time in his house. But for the life of me, I still can't figure out why he was appointed to investigate Kennedy's death, the man who had fired him.
And we have Richard on the line from Marseille. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Lisa. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing fine.
Good,
How's
good.
Carl?
He's kind of Carl-like. You know, what can I say?
Thanks for asking, Richard.
Richard, you sound like an old friend on the phone.
Yes.
You sound like a friendly voice. Who is that actor?
Donald Sutherland.
That is absolutely right. Donald Sutherland is the right answer. And you know what you've won? You've won two tickets to see Tony and Tina's wedding. This is Chicago's award-winning interactive dinner theater. You can join Tony and Tina for their nuptials and a reception, and you'll become part of the family. You can join for the buffet, the wedding cake, and the champagne toast. So for more information, you can check it out.
Is this about a wedding? Because it didn't work out for me.
No, but it might work out for Richard.
Yeah.
So,
Richard, are you married? How long? If so, how long, man?
I'm widowed.
You're widowed. Okay. All right. How long were you married?
17 years.
Oh, that's a long time.
It is a long
that's
time.
That's a long,
Chris,
long
you were
time.
Married that long,
was,
weren't you?
Yeah, I was married for two.
Too long.
Too long, yeah.
Yeah. Well, Richard, I hope you enjoy Tony and Tina's wedding. For more information, go to chicagotheaterworks.com. And thank you, my friend, for calling in.
Thanks, buddy.
Appreciate it. Thanks for calling. All right, Lisa Wolf and Mike and Elif and all of our listeners, it's time for The Whistler, one of the best mystery series of the golden age for sure. It started in 1942, was sponsored by Signal Oil. And the Whistler was played by Bill Foreman. He was, well, there was a lot of guys that played the Whistler, but he played it the longest. Nearly 700 episodes aired of the Whistler from 1942 through 1955. It did make a brief television appearance for about 1 year, and there were 8 Columbia films, Whistler movies, from 1944 to 1948. Very popular mystery drama series, and I hope you like this episode. It's called The Tale the Dead Man Told. That's the name of this episode. Let's go back to October 16th, 1944. Here's part one of The Whistler.
Let every go signal remind you that you do go farther with Signal Gasoline. The Signal Oil Program. Signal Oil brings you another strange tale by the Whistler. Tonight, the story of a man who gambled with life and of the tale the dead man told.
I am the Whistler, and I know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales, many secrets hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak.
And now, The Whistler.
A driving rain slants down outside the Golden Pheasant nightclub. It drenches the streets, but it doesn't seem to dampen the gaiety of the crowd inside. Yes, it's a gay crowd, happy and carefree, which just goes to prove once again that all that glitters is not gold. A couple detach themselves, make the short dash from door to curb and climb into a car. They seem far from carefree.
I can't understand it. It's only 11 o'clock. How come you're tired already?
Oh, I'm not tired. Just want to go home.
Okay, so we're going home.
Darling.
What?
Don't be angry with me.
Oh, I'm not. How can I be angry with you? Sandra.
You're so sweet. So understanding.
Well, I don't understand this. We were going to have fun tonight, going on to Sammy's place after the Golden Pheasant. Make a night of it.
You were going to. Those were your plans.
Well?
Those weren't my plans. And you know, sweetheart, that we always do what I want to do.
Is that so?
Mm-hmm. You know, sweetheart, that I can make you do anything I want you to do. Can I?
Is that so? Well, yeah, I guess you can. You little minx.
That's better.
So I take you home. When we could be having a good time. But what I want to know is why.
All right, I'll tell you. Because I'm afraid of Arthur. I'm afraid he might get home ahead of us.
Look, baby, I told you your husband is at the office. I left him there myself at 6 o'clock. He said he'd probably be there all night, or most of it, going over the books. This is inventory time. Very convenient, huh?
Yes, very convenient for us. By the way, Bert, didn't you say you wanted to stop at the office on the way home?
Yeah, I'm going to Richmond tomorrow morning. I might as well pick up my papers and things tonight. Thanks for reminding me. What would I do without you?
Oh, you've gotten along pretty well.
But I'm not going to get along forever without you. Sandra, when are you going to quit Arthur? When are you going to make the break?
Oh, let's not worry about that just yet. Maybe something will happen to make things easier.
But this has been going on now for months. I'm not going to wait forever.
You'll wait, darling. Just be patient.
How can you be so calm?
Oh, here's the office, dear. Turn in.
Oh, okay, okay. Sandra, you're a wonderful woman. A remarkable woman.
Yes, Bert Williams, Sandra's a remarkable woman. So remarkable that you're risking everything to be near her. Your friendship for Arthur, her husband. Your business partnership with him. Your reputation. None of them matter if you can just persuade Sandra to leave Arthur for you. But it's going to take a little more time, it seems.
I'll just be a minute.
I'm coming with you.
But, Sandra...
You're not going to leave me out here in the rain, on this dark street, alone.
No, but listen, Sandra. Arthur's up there. He might hear us and come out.
Oh, he won't see me, I promise you.
Oh, all right, then. Come on.
He might as well find out now as later anyway, mightn't he, Bert? That might be the best way, just get it over with. So you walk up, not being especially careful about the footsteps, down the hall, into your office, get the papers, back past his office, across that patch of light on the floor, coming through his closed door.
That's funny.
Shh. What?
Listen, not a sound.
Well, he wouldn't be talking to himself.
No, but maybe he's already gone and forgotten to turn out the light.
Arthur, and waste electricity. Not Arthur.
Oh, still he might have. Maybe you better stick your head in and see. I'll stand back out of sight. He'll never know.
But Sam...
You might as well. Besides, he'd think it was funny you didn't stop and say goodnight.
Yeah, I suppose so. Okay, just a minute. Hi there, you old workhorse. What are you up to? It's funny, he must have fallen asleep. Arthur, this is a fine way to act. Come on, wake... Arthur. Arthur. Good Lord.
Bert?
Sandra, stay out of here.
What's the matter? Is something wrong?
Sandra, go back. Stay.
Something the matter with Arthur? What? Oh, Arthur.
Sandra, be calm. I don't know what happened, but...
He's dead, isn't he?
Yes, he's dead, all right. Bullet right through his temple.
Oh, no. Why should he do a thing like that?
I don't know. But it does look like suicide.
Oh, Arthur.
There, there now, Sandra. Sit down. Try to keep calm.
Oh, Bert. I was through with him. I was going to leave him, but I never wished him this.
Of course not, darling. I know that. Now, just take it easy.
I can't believe he'd commit suicide. Why? Why?
Well, maybe he left a note. They usually do. Let's see. Here. There is something on the desk. Here. Here, look. It's addressed to me.
You?
Yeah. Dear Bert, this will probably be a shock to you, but believe me, it's best. Business is bad, but that's only part of it. You'll be able to carry on with me out of the way. Just one thing, look after Sandra for me, will you? Goodbye, Arthur.
Oh, Arthur. How could he do such a thing?
I can't tell from this whether he knew or not. What does this mean? You'll be able to carry on with me out of the way.
I don't know, unless... Of course he meant the insurance.
Insurance?
Yes. Didn't you two have some kind of partnership insurance?
Yes, that's right, of course. We took it out when we first started in business. If one of us died, the other got $100,000.
Yes, that's what he meant. Business was bad, but if he died, you'd get $100,000 to help with the business.
Only Sandra... Oh, what a fool! He made a terrible mistake.
Why?
I won't get any $100,000. I won't get a cent.
Well, why not?
Because there's a suicide clause in the insurance. It's paid for any natural or accidental death, but not for suicide. Suicide voids the insurance.
It was all for nothing. He did it all for nothing. Oh, Arthur.
Yes, he was a fool even in death.
Bert, how can you talk like that?
Why not, Sandra? He stood between me and what I wanted most in the world, you. Now there's nothing standing between us. We can be married, live the life we've wanted together. I haven't a cent outside the business.
Don't worry, we'll think of a way. It's ironic, you know. Only we had that $100,000.
Yeah, we might have, too, if only he hadn't made it so obviously suicide.
Bert, you don't suppose...
Suppose what?
It is suicide, isn't it? It couldn't have been...
Murder? Good Lord, Sandra, who could have murdered him?
Well, I don't know, but a robber, somebody...
No, no. Of course it's suicide. There's the note. Obviously a suicide note.
Of course, naturally. If there hadn't been a note, it might have looked like murder.
Sandra. Sandra, listen. If there was no note, if the police didn't find a note, it might look like murder to them.
What do you mean?
And if they called it murder, the insurance company would pay the $100,000.
But you're not thinking...
Why not? What difference would it make to him? He must have intended that I get the insurance money. Well, why should I be robbed of it just because he forgot something?
Bert, it's not right.
Why not? It's what he wanted. We're just carrying out the wishes of the dead. It's nobody else's business.
But you're forgetting if it looks like murder, then it is somebody else's business. The police. They'd have to find the murderer.
Which they couldn't do. Because there is no murderer.
But they might accuse even you.
Me? Yes, I hadn't thought of that.
A gun. Whose gun is that? I didn't know Arthur had a gun.
He didn't. Oh, good Lord, that's my gun. He must have taken it out of my desk.
Your gun? Well, then they would think that...
Yes, unless... Wait a minute. Would they...
It would have your fingerprints on it.
Naturally, it's my gun. And it has his on it, too, because he used it.
But that would prove it was suicide.
Yes, unless we wiped them off and put mine back on. The murderer would wipe his off anyway, but it would be natural for mine to be there.
Yes, that's right, of course. But they still might say you killed him for the insurance.
They might say that, but... Look, Sandra, I have a perfect alibi. I was with you. We've been at the Golden Pheasant all evening since 7:30. Plenty of people saw us there.
Now, wait a minute, please. Think a minute more. I wouldn't want anything to happen to you now.
Darling, don't worry. It's simple. They couldn't possibly convict me, even if they did decide I did it. Now, don't worry. Everything's going to be all right. I just wiped the prints off with my scarf. Then grip the gun there. Wipe it again, but not too well, so some of my prints will be left on. Now I drop it carelessly on the floor. Now the note. Just touch a match to it. There goes the evidence. Just a pile of ashes in the ashtray.
Couldn't they get you for destroying evidence?
Not if they don't know it ever existed, and how can they? Only you and I know.
But if they find the ashes in the ashtray, won't they examine them or something?
But they won't find them. Because now we dump the ashtray out the window and scatter the ashes to the four winds. There, that does it. Now we're all set.
Oh, darling, I hope so. I'm scared.
Don't be, baby. It'll be simple. Just leave it to me. And you'd better cry a little more, so you'll be properly tear-stained when the police get here.
Police?
Sure. That's the next step. Hello, operator. Get me the police station. Yes, the homicide division.
Did you hear the sound effect of the rotary dial there?
Oh, sure.
Probably people under 40 have never heard that sound before.
Yeah, we had rotary dial phones.
Yeah, it was like...
Yeah. I used to call radio stations with my rotary dial phone.
It would come back going...
I'm under 40. I've heard that sound in real life before.
Okay, so maybe... Gosh, you're under 40? God, you're young. Right?
Right.
Okay, well, anyway, that's what phones sounded like, folks, if you're 35 or under. That's what phones used to sound like.
God, he's young. God.
Gosh, so young.
And each...
Gosh, all three of you are so young.
You know, that voice was when they didn't have phones. They had wampum. They just had, like, you know, like fire.
Operator, man.
Right, Roger?
Heap big
Kimosabi.
Message. I'm out of smoke.
He was before... Yeah, you're before Alexander Graham Bell, aren't you?
Yeah.
Smoke
signals. So. I remember Alex when he was just knee-high to a grasshopper.
Little Alex. Yeah. All right, let's take a quick break. We're listening to The Whistler, and there's more coming your way here on the W. And we're back here at 11:38 on a Sunday night. Program 146 in the series. And you know what?
What?
I was driving home yesterday after the show, and I would say about 30 minutes after I was in the car, our podcast was up, Lisa. That is one talented woman in there, that Elif Garris. She can put a podcast up with the best of them. And I want to thank you, Elif, because I enjoy listening to myself on my way home.
It's my pleasure.
And I enjoy listening to Lisa make mistakes on the air. But that's okay, Lisa. You know what? We all learn by our mistakes.
Yeah.
Right?
It's a long road.
You know?
We'll get there.
Well, I have like an hour and a half drive, and it's nice. I like listening to the podcast. And
yeah, when I leave, I've kind of had enough, Carl, for a little while.
Really? You don't want to hear any more of it. I enjoy listening to you on the air.
Yeah, I need a little break sometimes.
You know?
It's
fun. You're good. You're very good on the air.
Good at what, Carl?
No matter what anyone else says about you, I think you're really good on the air. All right. We're listening to The Whistler. This is a good mystery series. And this is Elliot Lewis starring in this program. Elliot Lewis did a lot of dramas, but he was also great at comedy. He played Frankie Remley on the Phil Harris and Alice Faye show. He was also a great director, directed Suspense for many years. He was married to Kathy Lewis, and the two of them did On Stage together. He was also the star of The Voyage of the Scarlet Queen. He was like Mr. Radio, Elliot Lewis, and he's appearing on this episode called The Tale the Dead Man Told. Let's go back to 1944 for the conclusion now of The Whistler.
Well, Bert, you're skating on thin ice, don't you think? Making the police believe that Arthur's suicide is murder and possibly making them think you did it. That's a dangerous game you're playing. But now that it's done, the police seem to fall for your trick. At the coroner's inquest, they're eyeing you with suspicion. Your testimony to the coroner doesn't help much.
No, I definitely don't think it's suicide. He wasn't the type to commit suicide. He had no reason to that I know of.
And perhaps he had enemies who might have wanted to put him out of the way.
No. No, not that I know of.
The coroner seems satisfied with your testimony. Then Sandra answers the questions.
Yes, Mr. Williams and I spent the entire evening at the Golden Pheasant nightclub.
And your husband didn't come along?
He said he had some work to do. We dropped in at 11 to pick him up. That's when we found him.
Did your husband ever speak of taking his life? Was he despondent?
Oh, no. Never.
Mrs. Albers, do you think your husband committed suicide?
I feel sure that if he were to do such a thing, he would at least have left me a note. Some explanation. But he didn't. Therefore, I can't believe he took his own life.
That went over big, didn't it, Bert? That practically clinched it. They can't call it suicide now. Sandra convinced them. But just to add another link, there's the police officer to add his testimony.
The bullet entered the right temple on a 250-degree angle. That is, slightly from the rear and moving forward. Powder burns on the skin indicated that the gun was not held directly to the head, but several inches from it, perhaps three or four.
In your estimation, Captain, could it have been possible for the dead man to have fired the fatal shot himself?
Well, yes, possible, but it would have been an awkward position. If he had shot himself, it would seem more logical for him to place the muzzle directly against his temple.
And in your opinion, the gun was probably fired by someone else. Someone who came up from behind him, perhaps.
Well, that would only be an opinion. It might not have been. It could have been either.
Well, Bert, there's a break for you. A break you hadn't counted on. Arthur was very obliging. You can see him right now, deciding to hold the gun away from his head. No doubt he wanted to avoid unnecessary unpleasantness. He was so fastidious. Well, offer up a few thanks, Bert, because that did it. The coroner's jury has reached its verdict.
The jury finds the deceased, Arthur Albers, met death at the hands of a person or persons unknown.
You are listening to the Signal Oil Program. Let every go signal remind you that you do go farther with Signal Gasoline.
Williams, you pulled it off, didn't you? The coroner's jury called it murder by person or persons unknown. Oh, there'll be an investigation, but you're not worried about that. You'll be able to prove that you didn't do it. But now you've fixed it so that you can get that $100,000. Go ahead. Go on down to the insurance company and collect it.
Yes, naturally, Mr. Williams, you want the insurance benefit. It's rather customary to give us a little time to investigate a case like this, in which there seems to be some question of doubt.
But I need the money right away. The business, you see.
Yes, yes, of course, I understand that. But, you see, in case it were later proved that Mr. Albers' death was by suicide, then we'd not be able to pay
it. I know that, but the coroner's jury has already said that it was murder. Unless I'm very much mistaken, that makes it legal.
Yes, unless we could prove otherwise.
You mean you'll investigate further on your own?
Yes, yes, of course. We're required to do so.
But you're also required to pay me, since it's officially called murder, at least until you prove otherwise?
Yes.
Then I'll take that chance and pay you back if I'm wrong and it is suicide.
There's only one thing about that, Mr. Williams. By taking the money now, I warn you, you might be laying yourself open to suspicion of fraud in case it turned out to be suicide.
Fraud?
Yeah, oh, now, please don't misunderstand or don't... I'm not accusing you of anything. I only warn you that the courts might view your action as suspicious. I'm suggesting that it might be better to wait, let the decision be final before you collect your benefit.
I'll take the chance. I want the money now.
Very well, Mr. Williams. As you wish.
$100,000. Yes, you're sure of yourself now, aren't you, Bert? Very sure. And why not? You've deposited that certified check for $100,000 in your bank, and they can't touch you. So you go to Sandra to tell her the good news.
Now, baby, we can get out. Maybe in a week or two when it's all blown over, head for Mexico or Florida, anywhere you say.
Sounds wonderful, darling. I'd like to start out right now.
So would I. We better let things cool off a little first. The insurance company might smell a rat if we pulled out too quickly.
The insurance company has nothing to do with me. I could leave right now. Rest after the strain of the funeral, you know?
Without me? Hey, now, none of that. From now on, it's us together.
It's a fallacy, you know, that two can live as cheaply as one. That 100,000 would go a lot farther for just one of us.
Sandra, I don't understand you. Naturally, you're going to share it with me. I don't care anything about the money except for what I can do for you.
Oh, really, darling? Well, that's very nice. Because, you see, I've decided that I'll just take it all. So if you don't mind, you might write me a check or make out a bank draft or something.
Sandra, what is this, a joke?
It's no joke, I assure you, dear. I'm very attached to money. And the thought of that 100,000 thrills me, so I'd rather not have it piecemeal like a housewife's allowance. I want it now.
Good Lord, Sandra, do you realize what you're saying? You're telling me it's the money you want, not me.
Well, you might put it that way.
Are you trying to tell me that all this time I've meant no more to you than that?
Oh, it's been fun, darling.
Fun? Sandra, you can't mean that.
I'm afraid I do, Bert, so there's not much need for any further talk. Just transfer the 100,000 to my account tomorrow morning, and we'll call everything even.
Even? What fantastic notion makes you think I'd give you the money now?
It's far from fantastic. I have a notion you wouldn't like for me to tell the insurance company and the police that you perpetrated a fraud. That Arthur really did commit suicide. And you destroyed the evidence.
You wouldn't dare tell them. They wouldn't believe you in the first place. How could you prove it?
With a little slip of paper I have. Just a note. A note from Arthur. It came registered mail the day after he died. You might call it a suicide note.
No.
Yes. Isn't it logical that he'd write one to his wife as well as to his business partner?
I never thought of that.
No, darling, you didn't, did you? But it turned out very nicely for me. Now, when you transfer the money to my account and bring me the bank book, I'll do you a favor. I'll burn this little note like you burned the other one.
Okay. You win, Sandra.
That's a good boy. I'll expect you then about 10 in the morning.
Well, Bert, that's what you might call poetic justice. Well, poetic anyway. You really got taken, didn't you? But there's nothing to be done about it. She has you on the spot. And so you'll have to go down, transfer that 100,000 to her account, and bring her the deposit slip. You watch her burn the note and destroy the ashes, and now you're even.
Thanks, darling.
Someday, Sandra, you'll pay for this. Someday you'll get what you deserve.
Perhaps, who knows? But in the meantime, I'll be so comfortable. Thanks to you.
Yes, yeah, she rubbed it in, didn't she, Bert? And you go back to your apartment, smarting under her words. But you don't have too much time to think about it, Bert. Because there's a man from the DA's office waiting for you when you get there. And he takes you downtown to talk to the boss.
Just a couple of questions I want to ask you, Mr. Williams. Just to clear up a few points.
All right, anything I can do.
First, a minor point. Did either you or Mrs. Albers smoke while you were in Albers' office before the police arrived?
No. No, I'm sure we didn't.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, you say you were with Mrs. Albers all evening.
Yes, we went to the Golden Pheasant nightclub for dinner and dancing.
What time did you arrive there?
Well, rather early, about 7:30, I'd say.
And where were you before that?
Well, I was at the office till about 6. Then I went to my apartment to dress, I suppose. I can't really remember.
Mrs. Albers was not with you then?
No, I picked her up about 7:15. Why?
Well, you see, Mr. Williams, the autopsy proves that Albers was killed between 6 and 7.
Oh, I thought...
You thought what?
I thought it was probably later, that's all.
Is that so? No, it was definitely between 6 and 7, or just a short time after you say you left the office. And you were not with Mrs. Albers until 7:30, an hour later.
Why, no, I was at the apartment, but... Well, I'm sure I can prove that. The elevator boy would have seen me, and the maid, I have a maid. She testified that I was there.
Mr. Williams, I'm not questioning where you were. You're not under suspicion for Albers' death.
I'm not?
No, of course not. You never were. You see, from the very beginning, we had a pretty clear line on the real murderer.
What do you mean?
The ashtray was the first clue. You see, it was a little strange that a man working late at night hadn't piled up an ashtray full of cigarette butts. The ashtray had been used, but there were no butts left in it. It hadn't been dumped into the wastebasket, so we got a little suspicious. We found that it had been dumped out the window.
Out the window?
Yes. And among the cigarette butts that we found was one especially that interested us. It was smudged with lipstick. This naturally led us to think of a woman.
A woman? Not one...
No, not one of the office employees, because we found that the janitress had cleaned that ashtray about 6. After all, but Mr. Albers had left for the day. And you told us that Mrs. Albers didn't smoke when you two came in later that night.
Yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm. That meant that there was a woman there about the time Albers died. So we began looking around, and we got the main clue from the dead man's lips.
From the...
Yes. You might almost say he told us. You see, on his lip was a smudge of lipstick. That told us that indeed there had been a woman there, and she had been someone known intimately enough to kiss him, and incidentally to stand behind him without arousing his suspicion, from where she placed the gun to his head and fired.
But that might have been his wife's lipstick.
Yes, it might, mightn't it?
But, I mean, it could have been there all day, ever since she kissed him goodbye that morning.
It's possible, but not probable. He'd have seen it and wiped it off, or it would have worn off. But anyway, the next clue pointed in the same direction. Your prints on the gun had been smudged with some kind of fabric, not a handkerchief. We decided it could have been gloves worn by the murderer. Not leather gloves, but cloth gloves like a woman wears. Now, what woman might know where you kept your gun, be in the habit of kissing Albers, and so on? Only one, since Albers was the kind of a man he was. His wife.
You mean... You're charging Sandra with the murder?
Yes. You clinched it with what you just told me.
What do you mean?
You told me the truth. That you didn't pick Sandra Albers up until 7:15. She slipped. She told me you picked her up shortly after 6. At exactly the time she was killing her husband.
No, she didn't do it. You're making a terrible mistake. I know she didn't do it.
How do you know, Mr. Williams?
Because Arthur Albers committed suicide.
Oh, come now, Williams.
He did. There was a note, a suicide note.
What happened to it?
I burned it so it would look like murder and I'd get the insurance money.
Mr. Williams, I know how you feel about Mrs. Albers, and I know you're trying to protect her. But I warn you, she's not worth lying for. She's going to be prosecuted for the murder of her husband. And she's going to be convicted. Nothing you say can help her.
Well, the district attorney was right. He did convict Sandra Albers for the murder of her husband. All through the trial, Bert Williams kept trying to explain the clues they brought in, kept protesting Sandra's innocence. But it was no use. Nobody believed him. And when she died... Something happened to him. He said he'd murdered her, that ghosts haunted him, that he heard her calling to him. His friends decided his mind had snapped and they had him put away. Too bad. No need for it at all. No. Because what Bert didn't know was that Sandra really had killed her husband. Yes, the district attorney was right. And Bert, who had started out to make it look like he had committed a murder he hadn't, ended up in a madhouse because he thought he had committed one that he hadn't. Funny, isn't it? Next Monday at 9 o'clock, the Signal Oil Program will bring you another strange tale by the Whistler. The Signal Oil Program is broadcast for your entertainment by the Signal Oil Company, marketers of Signal's famous Go Farther gasoline and motor oil, and by your neighborhood Signal Oil dealer, who is at your service daily to keep your car running for the duration. The Signal Oil Program, produced and directed by George W. Allen, the story by John Dunkel and music by Wilbur Hatch, is transmitted to our troops overseas by the Armed Forces Radio Service.
Bill Pennell speaking for your friend, the Signal Oil Company, and suggesting once again that you let every go signal remind you that you do go farther with Signal Gasoline.
That's the Whistler, a good broadcast from October 16th, 1944. I love the Whistler, Lisa, because there was always a twist ending at the end of the Whistler episodes.
Twist ending at the end.
I knew you were going to get me on that. I knew you weren't going to let me slide.
But we do like the twist endings.
Yeah,
like to be a little surprised.
Towards the conclusion.
At the end.
Right. That's The Tale the Dead Man Told, starring Elliot Lewis. I also heard Earl Ross in that. October 16th, 1944. Let's take a break. Then it's much more on the WGN Radio Theater. All right. It is Monday morning, 12:07 in the morning here. Thanks for staying up, folks, and listening to Classic Radio. We tuned into the Whistler in our first hour. Lisa was whistling while it was on. She's like,
yeah, I'm a lousy whistler, but I try.
And then we have Jack Benny in this hour. And then the big story in our third hour here on the WGN Radio Theater. All of this brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars as a man who moves from the city to the Ozarks and must pay off a debt to a drug lord in the upcoming TV series Ozark. Hmm. And the winner gets a pair of tickets to see Tony and Tina's Wedding, Chicago's award-winning interactive dinner theater.
All right. Give us a call, 312-981-7200, if you know the actor. And here's a hint. He was one of the stars of Identity Thief.
Here's my license with my name right there. Sandy Bigelow Patterson. Gotcha.
You know who that actor is? I love this guy.
Gotcha.
He's great. 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this break.
And this
I did it with the really deep voice.
I noticed that was pretty deep.
I was trying to be like,
yeah,
really.
Like Roger.
Chicago Tribune delivers the stories that make the city. Huh?
Yeah, that was
what do you think?
Really good.
Maybe I could get a job as a voiceover guy.
Yeah, keep working on it. Keep working on it. You can take lessons from Roger Maddish.
I need a job.
Yeah, I know. So do I.
So hire me somebody.
We're back. This is the WGN Radio Theater. We're waving to some people out the window, though they can't hear us. I don't know if they can or not out there. But we're playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it one more time.
Here's my license with my name right there. Sandy Bigelow Patterson. Gotcha.
I love the gotcha. We've got Paul from Woodstock on the line. Hey, Paul.
Hey there.
How are you?
I am doing great.
Paul has a deeper voice than me. He could be a voiceover guy.
Well, that's not really a difficult task, now, is it?
Paul's got a nice voice.
I do have a very deep voice.
You do have a great voice.
Paul, have you done radio voiceover stuff?
Many, many years ago, like 30 years ago, I was in radio news a long, long, long time.
So are you for hire, Paul?
Depends on the price.
I'm with you on that.
I'm going to have Paul be my agent then.
Okay. You need one. Paul, we're hoping to give you two tickets to see Tony and Tina's Wedding, if you can tell me who that great actor is.
That was Jason Bateman.
Jason Bateman is absolutely right, and we are thrilled to give you two tickets to Tony and Tina's Wedding, and you can join Tony and Tina for their nuptials with the reception following, and you can be part of the family and have a buffet and wedding cake and a champagne toast. And you can check it all out at ChicagoTheaterWorks.com. And we hope that you enjoy the show. It's a lot of fun.
I'm sure I will. Thank you
so much.
Thank
you're welcome, Paul. Thank you. All right. It's time for the Jack Benny program. And Jack Benny, probably the most famous radio star and television star of the golden age of radio and TV. He started on radio in 1932. Lasted all the way to 1955. He played a fictional version of himself, the radio, film, and TV star. What a terrific show. The best writers. You know, he played this sort of cheap and vain, insecure, untalented guy who was never older than 39. But, of course, that's not how he was in real life. He was just the opposite of that. He was a very generous person. And he had a great cast of characters around him. Mary Livingston, who was his real-life wife, Phil Harris, Eddie Rochester Anderson, Dennis Day, Don Wilson. The TV version, when it came, they made the transition, very successful transition to television in 1950. That lasted 15 years on TV. So extremely successful. The Jack Benny program, we have it for you now. This is from April 20th of 1947, and they do a skit called The Egg and I. Let's tune in now to part one of the Jack Benny program.
The Jack Benny program. Starring Jack Benny with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Rochester, Dennis Day, and yours truly, Don Wilson. Ladies and gentlemen, over these many years that I've been introducing our scintillating star, my one regret has been that I'm not a poet. For if I were, I would paint a word picture with colorful phrases.
What a beautiful thought, Don. I can just imagine you a poet. Henry Wadsworth Fatfellow. Continue, Don.
However, you don't have to be a Shelley or a Keats to...
I'll get it, Don. Hello?
Hello, Mr. Benny, this is Rochester.
Rochester, you certainly picked a fine time to call. Why aren't you listening to the program?
That's why I called, boss. There's something wrong with the radio.
Oh, maybe there's a break in the electric cord. You know, the one that runs from the radio to where we've got it plugged in.
I thought of that, boss, so I traced it. I started at the radio, went around the baseboard, up to the windowsill, out the window, across the driveway, through the hedge, and right to the plug on Mr. Coleman's back porch.
Hey, Rochester, I hope nobody saw you.
Well, just as I reached the porch, Mrs. Coleman came out, so I ducked behind the hedge and meowed like a cat.
Did you fool her?
I think so. She left two saucers of milk.
Two?
Yeah, one had a note on it. This one's for Mr. Benny.
Good, I'll have it when I get home. Anyway, Rochester... If the cord is plugged in right, maybe there's something wrong with the radio itself. Did you check the tubes?
Mm-hmm.
The condenser?
Mm-hmm.
The transformer?
Mm-hmm.
The dials?
Boss, I even put murine in the magic eye.
Oh.
I don't know what to do. I hate to miss your program.
Well, I've got an idea, Rochester. I'll leave the receiver off the hook, and you'll be able to hear the whole show over the telephone.
Yes, sir.
Okay, Don, let's get on with the program.
Ladies and gentlemen, as I was saying, even though I'm not a poet, today I'd like to introduce our star with a little poem.
A poem?
Yes. To Jack Benny, I love my boss, but he's so cheap, he only spends a slow buck.
Slow buck?
His suits are from Montgomery Ward, his hair from Sears and Roebuck.
What?
And here he is, Jack Benny.
Again, this is Jack Benny talking. Hair from Sears and Roebuck. Don, I can write poetry true. As a matter of fact, I have one about you.
Oh, about me?
Yes. Reynolds flew around the world in a plane that was made to order. But if he tried to fly around you, he wouldn't get south of the border. Hello, Jackson. Your name may not be John Greenleaf, but you're much wittier. Yes, sir.
Oh, Jack, how can you compare flying around the world with me? I'm not so fat.
You're not, eh? Don, there's a 3-hour difference in time between your belt buckle and back pocket. Next week, it'll be 4 hours.
Hey, Jackson, if you really want to
get... Wait a minute, Phil. I want to see what Rochester thought of that joke. Hello? 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 Rochester, hello?
Hello? Hello?
Rochester, I just told a joke. Where were you?
I had to answer the door. The man from the cleaners was here.
What did he want?
He found a 50-cent piece on the floor, and he wondered if it came out of your suit. I told him it wasn't yours.
Rochester, what makes you so sure it didn't fall out of my suit?
Oh, boss, calm down!
What?
Before you send a suit to the cleaners, you loosen the lining, finger the cuffs, turn all the pockets inside out, and then run the lint through the sieve 3 times.
Stop making things up. And if you want to hear the program, you better stay at the phone.
Yes, sir. And by the way, the mailman was here and just left a package.
A package?
From Sears and Roebuck. You can be a blonde again.
Good, good. That's the one that makes me look like Nelson Eddy. Now, I've got to get on with the show, so don't hang up. Now, Phil, what were you talking about?
Well, I was just going to say, Jackson, if you want to get some class on the program, how about doing something different, something entertaining like, well, like letting Livy and me sing a song together?
Hey, that sounds like a pretty good idea. You'll sing with Phil, won't you, Mary?
No, thanks. I sang with Phil before.
What about it?
I didn't mind him singing about turnip greens, but he kept time by hitting me on the head with a ham hock.
Oh. All right, Livy, all right. So if that's the way you want to feel about it, don't sing with me. I just thought it would be nice to have a trio. Trio? You and Mary would make a nice trio?
Yeah.
Look, Phil, let me explain something to you. One is a solo, two is a duet. Now, if you add a third person, you've got a trio.
Oh.
And if you add a fourth person, you have a quartet.
Uh-huh.
Now, Phil, if you had four people and you found a fifth, what would you have?
Throw me that lead again, will you?
All right. If you had four people and you found a fifth, what would you have?
A quintet. I fooled you that time, didn't I?
Why, Phil, that's right. If you had a fifth, you'd have a quintet.
Yeah, but they'd all be loaded.
I knew it. Mary, I don't blame you for not wanting to sing with them. Phil knows absolutely nothing about music.
I do, too.
Phil, what you know about music, you could write on an ice cube with a branding iron. Believe me. What are you laughing at, Mary?
Did you see the way the arranger has to write the music so Phil can read it?
No, how?
An eighth note is a diamond, a quarter note is a heart, a half note a club, and a whole note a spade.
Phil, you have your music written out in diamonds, hearts, clubs, and spades?
Certainly.
How do you read it?
Well, it's simple. Look, here, I'll show you. Now, look at this sheet of music. See?
That makes no sense at all to me.
Sure it does, Jackson. Take this bar, for instance. Now, you see those notes right here? One right after the other?
Oh, you mean the scale?
Scale? What's that?
What's that? Phil, what do you call this?
That's a flush.
A flush. Well, look, Phil, what about this next bar? It has two notes, then a space, and then two more notes.
That's an inside straight.
An inside straight. You mean you draw to it?
If you play a violin, if you play a trumpet, you blow to it.
Mary, stop helping us. Phil, if you want to play your music by cards, that's all right with me. But what's this king doing here?
That's Petrillo.
I should have known. All right, all right. We've had enough of that. It's time for a song. Dennis! Dennis! Dennis, what are you yawning about?
I didn't get any sleep last night. My mother and father had a big argument.
An argument?
Yeah, it was all about you. My mother said you were a jerk. Then my father got up and said you were a great guy and a fine example of a man.
Your father said that?
May he rest in peace.
Now, stop being silly. Your father's sitting right out here in the audience.
Yeah, doesn't he look awful?
Cut that out.
Dennis, why does your mother dislike Jack so much?
Well, she used to go with Mr. Benny before she met my father.
She did not.
She says she did.
What was your mother's name before she married your father?
I didn't know her then.
Of course you didn't. Now, come on, kid. Let's have your song.
Okay.
And face the telephone so Rochester can hear it, will you?
You and yet I
Someday you'll say goodbye. Then violins will cry, and so will I, mademoiselle. Just like wine does. No heart ever yearned the way that mine does for you. And yet I know too well, someday you'll say goodbye. Then by all
like a moose needs a hat rack. I can't understand why that didn't get a laugh. Norman Krasner liked it. And that was Dennis Day singing his latest Victor recording. Man, you can get killed around here. That was Dennis Day singing his latest Victor recording, Mamzelle. And now, ladies and gentlemen, everything falls down on us. No rehearsals. Anything happens here, you know?
All right, that's the first portion of the Jack Benny program from 1947. We'll get back to it in just a few minutes. Thank you, Esmeralda, and thank you, Roger. Appreciate you very much. And, you know, I have to drive to Florida tomorrow.
Oh, that sounds like a tough call there. It's Florida. You'll lay in the sun.
People are probably wondering, why would you drive?
No, Carl's a big complainer, let's just say.
It's a long story why I have to drive there.
It's okay, but you're going to get there and you'll be on vacation. So what are you complaining about?
I'll get there probably by Wednesday, right?
You're leaving Monday? Well, you'll get there Tuesday night.
Leaving tomorrow morning. I'm not even going to bed tonight.
You'll drive all day Monday and all day Tuesday. You'll get there Tuesday night. Yes.
Think so?
Yes.
And then I'm going to get a little tan. I'll have come back with a little...
See, what are you complaining about?
I'll have a little, you know, tan.
Just another manic Monday.
Wish it was Sunday.
I'll show you my thong lines when I get back in the tan.
I'm looking forward to that.
You guys
want
to see that?
Yes,
maybe
very
do a Facebook Live of that when I get back.
That's a great idea.
We couldn't figure out what to do on a Facebook Live
tonight.
Here's
what we have to do. We have to do a before and an after so we know that there's a change.
I'm just pale.
Well, let's do that. We'll see the pale. Right. And then on next week, we'll see the tan lines. Yeah,
oh,
the deep,
that's a good
dark,
idea.
Exotic tan that you're coming back
Maybe
with.
Some of our listeners can text us in and ask us and tell us what they'd like to see us do on Facebook Live.
Wow,
I'm
that's
just
a loaded
about
question,
this.
Carl.
What would you like to see us do on Facebook Live?
Yeah, keep it clean. This is a family show, just saying.
Yeah.
Okay, just this throwing it out there. 312-981-7200. We are open to suggestions.
We're happy to do it. We'll work for food.
We do. Pizza, please.
Yeah. Lisa said she would go eat pizza at anybody's house. You were saying that the other week.
I did. I might not be like the whole story, but that's sounding really good right now.
But I will be back Friday night.
Right.
And I'll be back for the show.
Okay.
So I'll have I guess I'll have 2 or 3 days in the sun.
That's what
That'll
I'm
nice.
Saying. You know, it's all about the attitude. Enjoy your time there.
Got to look at
the bright side.
The bright. It will be bright. It's going to be sunny
out there. I hope so. It's been beautiful.
What's it
there?
Like in Naples?
That's
I'll be
the
in
West
a Naples
Coast.
Area.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah. I like it out there.
I do too.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We're not,
looking
feel
forward
sorry
to 20-something hours in a car, though. Not looking forward to that.
You'll be fine.
I guess so. All right. Well, I'll be listening to a lot of classic radio. That's for sure. I listen to it on my phone.
You stop at Chipotle on the way and get some great food.
No, you know what? I always stop at a Cracker Barrel. I like Cracker Barrels.
Well, the store is fun there.
I like walking through the store.
The stores are fun.
Generally, I buy a bunch of stuff because I can't get through a Cracker Barrel without buying a bunch of stuff. They sell Twizzlers there, too.
Cracker Barrel, where's
is
the
it
closest
like in
one?
The cornfields?
You can. There's a Cracker Barrel.
Yeah,
there's Cracker
around.
Barrels in Illinois.
Yeah,
they're just on the highways.
Yeah.
Yeah, highways and byways, and they sell Twizzlers there, which is one of my favorite candies, yeah. Along with Chunky.
Of course, they sell that at Walgreens.
They have the big, they have the giant Chunkies there. Whoa, the big ones.
That's, you like? Big
yeah.
Ones?
Oh, I like the big Chunkies, man. I get the and then it's almost like four Chunkies in one. You know?
I'm just going to say this to my... I don't want to get back on that
all
reel.
Right.
So,
Elif
has
given me
reel.
The sign. Get back on the Jack Benny program. Let's go back to April 20th, 1947. Here's the conclusion to the Jack Benny program.
Ladies and gentlemen, for our feature attraction tonight, we're going to present our version of the Universal International picture based on Betty McDonald's bestseller, The Egg and I. In our
Jack, you can't do The Egg and I. Fred Allen did it last week.
I heard it, Don. But this won't conflict with the way Allen did it. You see, we're going to do a comedy version. Anyway, folks, in our play tonight, I will be Fred McMurray, and Mary Livingston will be Claudette Colbert.
What part am I going to play, Jack?
Well, Don, the scene takes place on a farm, so you can play the part of our pig.
Oh, Jack, every time you do a farm sketch, I play the part of a pig. I want to do something else.
Well, what would you like to be, Don?
A canary.
Don, you a canary?
Beep, 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 beep.
Well, that's not so bad. All right, Don, you can be the canary, but in order for people to believe it, do you happen to have a yellow suit?
Yellow suit? No, no, I haven't.
Oh. Well, why don't you step out in the street and put on a taxi cab? And now for... Oh, wait a minute. Before we start, I want to go to the telephone, see if Rochester is enjoying the show. Hello? Hello? How do you like that? Rochester!
Put on the coffee, honey!
Rochester, we're going to do a play, and I want you to hear it.
Okay, you're the boss.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, The Egg and I. As the scene opens, we find the newlyweds, Claudette and Fred, driving out to their new home. Gee, Claudette, I hope you like the new farmhouse I bought.
Oh, I know I will, Mr. McMurray.
Oh, you can call me Fred. We've been... married a week now. Remember after the preacher said, I pronounce you man and wife, we turned to each other and shook hands?
Oh, yes. And gee, you were nervous.
I was not nervous.
You were, too. You put the ring on the preacher's finger and gave me
$10. $10? Gee, I was nervous. Anyway, it sure was a wonderful wedding. All our friends were there. The music played softly. And we made a lovely-looking couple as we marched down the aisle.
Yes, but don't you think it would look nicer if I had carried the flowers?
They were bluebells. They went so well with my eyes. But, darling, wasn't it exciting as we drove away from the church with those shoes tied in back of the car?
Yeah.
I wonder what made them bounce like that.
My mother was still in them.
Oh, yes. I cut her loose when we went through Anaheim. They can always use another smudge pot. There. Well, here we are. Look, darling, there's our new home.
Gee, it sure looks run down.
Yeah, but we'll fix it up. There's the man from the real estate office. Oh, mister. Mister.
Yes.
I just bought this house. You're the man from the real estate office, aren't you?
Yes, Nelson's the name. I'm here to show you around.
Gee, what a peculiar style of architecture this house has. It's not French Normandy. Is it early American?
No, crummy colonial.
Well, let's go inside.
Come on, honey.
All right.
I'm talking to my wife.
Oh, now follow me. Here's the front door. A few quarts of oil will fix that.
Come on, Fred, let's go in.
Just follow me, folks. I'll show you through the house. This is the living room. This is the dining room. And this is the bedroom.
Gee. Mr. Nelson, does the bathroom have a tile floor?
Shall we go out and see?
I'd like to see the kitchen.
Right through this door. There. Isn't it a beauty?
Well, I don't know. The stove looks very old and awfully dirty.
Oh, that's just a little dust. I'll blow it off.
Mister, have you tried Sen-Sen?
Never mind that. Gee, this place does look run down.
Yes, but with a little work, you can make it look like $1 million.
Whoops.
Well, it's getting kind of late. I better go.
Goodbye, Mr. Nelson.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Mr. Nelson.
Mr. Nelson!
Oh, you. Nobody wants me to have any fun. Goodbye.
Well, darling, here we are in our own little home.
Well, we'd better start getting to sleep.
On a farm, you have to get up at 4 a.m.
You're right, sweetheart. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Get out of here! Darling. Darling. Darling, you're snoring.
No, that's the rooster. It's morning.
Oh. Well, you hurry and get breakfast ready. I'll go out and milk the cows. Good thing I slept in my clothes. My, it's pitch dark this early in the morning. Now, where's that milking pail? Ah, here it is. Easy, Bossy, easy. That's a good girl, Bossy. Easy, Bossy, easy. Gee, I can't seem to find... Uh-oh, wrong end. Now. Easy, Bossy, easy. Where's that cow? Ah, there you are, Bossy. Now hold still while I fix the pail and stool. There. That's a good girl. Oh, la, 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 la. La, 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 la. Oh, la, 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 la. Better change.
Oh, Fred, are you through milking?
I'm not, but I think the cow is. Hey, what are you holding?
Look, I just found it. It's a black kitten with a white stripe down its back.
Well, shucks. If that isn't the cutest little... Kitty, have you tried Sen-Sen? Now, Claudette, don't stand around. We've got to feed the animals.
Okay.
Beep, 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 beep.
Oh, look, Fred, isn't it cute the way our canary follows us around?
Yeah. Now, shoo, canary, shoo, shoo. We got to feed the chickens. Here, chick, 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 chick. Come on, chick, 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 chick. Here's some corn for you.
Oh, Fred, look at that hen sitting on the nest.
Where? Oh, yes. Darling, now we've got breakfast. Well, I better get some oats for the horse, hay for the cow, and... What happened?
Our canary stepped on the pig and killed it.
Too bad.
Beep, 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 beep,
beep. What a canary. I should have gotten suspicious when he bent the bars in his cage. Claudette, maybe the canary is hungry.
He can't be. A little while ago, I gave him a side of beef.
Well, give him the other side. Now, let's get on with the... Oh, look, here comes someone. Hello.
Howdy, neighbors, howdy. Zeke Harris is my name. Live right over the hill from you.
Well, do you have a farm over there?
Yep, I raise a little of this, a little of that, mostly corn.
For your pigs?
No, from a still.
Oh, you have a still?
Yes, sir, she'll make 20 gallon a day.
20 gallons a day, that isn't much.
It ain't bad, my old lady don't drink.
In here, Zeke. How long you been living around this section?
Well, now, let me see here. I moved here in 1918. That's 1947. That's 15 years.
Wait a minute, Zeke. From 1918 to now is 29 years you've lived here.
Well, we don't count the 14 years of prohibition as living.
Oh, got any children?
Yep, I got two sons, but we ain't seen them since I run away with the circus. That was 10 years ago. Sure missed the boys.
Shame both of them left. Maybe one of them will come back.
Ain't likely. They're Siamese twins.
Oh, Siamese twins, eh?
Yep, they're pretty attached to each other. Oh, Zeke, if you just had a partner, you'd be another one of them Lum and Abners.
Hey, Zeke.
Hiya, neighbors. Howdy, Zeke. Good to see you all.
Well, hello.
Ma Kettle is the name. Live right down the road.
Which house?
No house, just down the road.
No house?
Yep, she's married to Paul Kettle, the laziest man in the state.
He's the laziest man in the world. One day, he sat on an acorn. 20 years later, we had to shake him out of the tree.
No kidding.
Well, what do you know? Here comes Paul Kettle, the lazy critter now. Name is Dennis, but folks call him Paul.
Howdy, Paul.
Hi, Zeke. Hi, folks. Ma, put your arms around me and squeeze me. I feel like exhaling. There, that feels better. Any place to lie down around here?
Oh, Paul, stand up for a while.
By the way, what are you folks figuring on raising here?
Chickens.
Oh, wouldn't try it if I were you. Tried to raise some myself a few years ago. Never had any luck.
What happened?
Bought 10 hens and laid a lot of eggs, but none of them never did hatch.
Well, how many roosters did you have?
Oh, roosters.
Hmm.
Well, I guess I better be going along now. Gotta go home and help my pig write a letter.
Your pig writes a letter?
Oh, yeah, I just tell him how to spell, and he already has the pen and ink. Oh, Pa Kettle, you may be a hick, but...
Why don't you finish?
Too lazy.
Well, look, my wife and I are just going in to have breakfast. Why don't you folks come in and join us?
That's okay with me. Me too. Pick me up, Ma.
Well, come on, let's all go in and... Hey, wait a minute. What happened to Zeke? Where's Zeke Harris?
Oh, he had to run along. He's got his own show.
What?
I can stay till Wednesday.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
That's the Jack Benny program, broadcast from April 20th, 1947. Great episode, and in the cast, Mel Blanc, along with Mary Livingston, and you had Dennis Day doing some singing on that. Great Jack Benny program. I love Jack Benny. Always have. Probably always will.
I think you can relate to him really well. You have some similarities to Jack Benny.
Really?
Yeah, I think you do. Huh. In a good way. I mean, that is a compliment.
Well, he drives a Maxwell car, and I drive a Maxwell car.
Yeah, that's what I was referring to. That's exactly. But, I mean,
1928 Maxwell.
His persona is self-deprecating, and I think yours is, too, sometimes. Mm-hmm.
And he wears a toupee, and I do.
And he wears a toupee, and right. That's kind of similar to yours.
There you go.
So, yeah.
Right, and he was on the radio.
Of course.
And I'm on the radio.
Funny
and
talented.
He's funny, and I wish I was funny and talented.
Exactly.
So there is a lot of...
It's close.
Yeah, there is. All right. Yeah. Well, I see what you're talking about here. Yeah. All right. Well, let's take a break. Then it's much more on the WGN Radio Theater. All right. It's 1:05 in the morning. Thanks for staying up with us. Ella, if we have to wake Lisa up, she's out. She's not like
Lisa. Lisa, it's showtime.
What?
It's a celebrity scoop.
Celebrity what?
Got another hour, Lisa. And then you can go Betty Bye.
I am the only one with energy in this room. I'm just saying. I am so wide awake.
I'm not going to even be able to sleep. I have to go home. I have to pack.
Complain, complain, complain.
Get in my car. We're supposed to be on the road by 5:30 in the morning.
All right, but
that's
then you'll be in Florida.
Nothing good happens at 5:30 in the morning.
Well, you know me. I like to get up early.
Unless you're sleeping. That's good.
Right, Carl? I'm an early
Yeah, you're
riser.
A real early bird. Yeah, yeah. You're a bird, all right.
I'm an early riser. Early to bed, early to rise. Makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise.
Right. Okay. Well, right. In this hour, we have a classic radio show. Did you know that?
Do we?
Yeah.
Get out.
It's called The Big Story.
This is good. I think everybody's going to like this one.
Yeah, The Big Story. I don't think we played one here.
No, not on the show.
On the WGN Radio Theater. I think they'll like it. It's like a crime drama. It was dramatizations of true stories of real-life newspaper reporters. And they would send in their story and then...
And that's what makes it good, because they're based on actual stories.
Right.
It makes it more exciting.
Right. And also the acting makes it good, too.
That always helps,
the music and the sound effects.
Okay. And a little bit of that, too.
Oh, you know, I wanted to mention, folks, that I hope you'll go to this website. It's a new project. I just finished it. It was about a two-year project between the start to finish. And I just finished it maybe a couple months ago. Lisa's in it. I mean... Wow, Lisa.
Right?
Congratulations.
Thanks, Carl.
Did a great job.
You know, I get a call and I show up on time.
I'm not sure what part you play exactly in this.
I don't remember.
But anyway, I produced a dramatized, with sound effects and music, audio New Testament Bible from the New Living Translation, which is a translation meant to be read aloud. So it's really great, and it has amazing actors in it. Kevin Sorbo plays the voice of God in it, and we have Josh Lucas as Jesus, and Ashley Judd plays Mary Magdalene. There's all kinds of great stars in it. And if you go to the website, which is breathebible.com, B-R-E-A-T-H-E, bible.com, you can download the 2.5-hour audio book of Luke. And Christian Stolte, who plays on Chicago Fire, one of the regulars on Chicago Fire, plays Luke. But you'll hear all these other actors in there, too. It's 2.5 hours. It's absolutely free. Just go to breathebible.com and download it and share it with everybody. I'd love you to take a listen to it. All right, The Big Story that's coming your way. It's brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop. Brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars as Jack Ryan in the upcoming TV series, Jack Ryan, as a CIA analyst thrust into a dangerous field assignment.
Really?
Yes.
This guy's playing it?
Yes.
Huh.
Interesting.
312-981-7200. What do they win?
They're going to win a pair of tickets to see Tony and Tina's wedding.
All right. So here's a hint. This actor played Jim on The Office.
Hey, Dwight, there's a bear wrestling a cyborg out in the parking lot.
All right, there you have it.
He's great.
Do you know who that is? 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this break.
And we're back. This is the WGN Radio Theater, and we are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it again.
Hey, Dwight, there's a bear wrestling a cyborg out in the parking lot.
And we took a caller offline, and we spoke to Sally from Buffalo Grove, and she knew the right answer was John Krasinski from The Office, but in this case, he will be playing Jack Ryan, and so he is a big winner, or Sally actually is a big winner.
I'm not sure about the casting on that.
You aren't?
I don't know if I would have cast him
as Jack Ryan.
Yeah. It's kind of...
I know, it's unusual,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's a little weird.
I hope I didn't make a mistake.
No offense to John, but...
Well, maybe this is his way of showing a, you know, he's a lot different in The Office. He's, you know, some more of a comedy type light role.
Not seeing this.
Well, maybe you'll have to watch and find out.
Okay.
But Sally will be seeing Tony and Tita's wedding, and she will get to see their nuptials and the reception and the buffet and the wedding cake and a champagne toast. You know, sort of like being part of the family for the wedding. So it's a lot of fun, an interactive dinner
theater. Yeah, weddings can be fun.
They can be.
Yeah.
Especially.
It's what happens after.
That's right. Let's stick to just the wedding. For more information about Tony and
just
Tina's wedding,
out there.
Go to Chicago.
Just kidding.
ChicagoTheaterWorks.com. It's running through April 29.
Just joking.
What? You
just
never.
Just pulling your leg.
You don't joke.
Just pulling a little leg there.
just like a little frog leg.
A
little bit of a leg.
All right. So the big story. Are you ready for this? This came to radio in 1947, it was a crime drama, lasted all the way to 1955, so it was like 9 years on the radio. It dramatized true stories of real-life newspaper reporters, and it was a top-rated show, very popular. Each week, the program recognized the reporter who wrote the story, and he or she received 500 smackaroos. Back in 1947, that's a lot of money.
It's
like a lot of money now.
That would be nice.
You know? I'll take $500. Got $500, Lisa?
I
need it for the road trip. I might need, like, that's $100 a day for a week.
Is that how that works?
The math.
I could use that.
And Bob Sloan was the narrator on this. It had a debut on television, lasted until 1957 on TV, from 1949 to 1957. So this had a pretty long run on both radio and television, and you'll hear why. It's a good, good series. Let's go back to January 11th, 1950. This is called Gambling, Divorce, and Murder, Part 1 of The Big Story.
The Big Story. You're the night clerk?
You just signed the register. You just give me your money.
Okay, you're the guy. Just tell me this. How's the hunting in these parts?
You mean deer, bear, rabbit, that kind of thing?
Yeah. Where can I get a .22 automatic pistol or rifle?
Gee, I don't know.
All right, tell me this. I see a big full-page ad in the paper. Open house at Calnever Ranch. What's that?
It's a big place out near the California border, about 30 miles out. They do it the opening of every season. Free drinks on the house, free meal.
Big crowd?
Packed.
Maybe that'll be even better than, what did you say, deers, bears, and rabbits? Yeah, that ought to be even better. Now I want a .22 rifle or automatic pistol. Now.
Reno, Nevada. The story of a reporter who showed that gambling and divorce can also mean murder. Reno, Nevada. The stories that actually happened. Frank McCullough's story, as he lived it.
The body was found slumped over the wheel of a Cadillac, a bullet having entered through the left temple and lodged in the brain. The necktie was drawn up tight against the throat. He was identified by a local resident of the Lake Tahoe region, just inside the Nevada border, near California.
Why, sure, Sheriff, everybody knows him. Name's Wenzel. Owns a lot of property in these parts. Some say he's rich as Croesus. Some say he didn't have a dime.
2 feet from the rich or poor real estate dealer, on the floor of the car, was the casing from a .22 caliber shell. And on the seat next to him was a bag of sweet rolls bought at the Elixir Bakery near Lake Tahoe.
These rolls bought here?
That's right, Sheriff. These are our 6 for a quarter. They're very good.
I'm sure. Did a big fat man about 70 buy them?
You mean Mr. Wenzel? That's right. He buys them almost every other day. You know, sometimes I can't understand whether he buys them because he likes them, like he says, or because that's what he eats for his lunch.
Did he say anything to you about going to the open house at the Calneva Ranch?
Isn't that funny, now that you mention it? I said to my husband, what's he buying rolls for if he's going to the Calneva Ranch opening? He'll get enough to eat there.
Okay, thanks. Say, let me have one of those brownies. They look good.
By now, the news of the death had reached you, Frank McCullum, reporter for the Reno Gazette, reached all of Reno. And you were out at the Calneva Ranch with Sheriff Parsons as he questioned the head waiter. The ranch was a beautiful, sprawling place. Its dining room in California, open till 2. Its bar and gambling room in Nevada, open all night. Very pleasant and comfortable and very convenient. And the head waiter went with the place.
Well, you see, Sheriff, our open house is perhaps the most popular event of the season. We get, 2,500, 3,000 people in that day.
And Wenzel was in?
Oh, yes. Like I said, it was crowded. And Mr. Wenzel was waiting on the line for a table, and I didn't have a table. I mean, I couldn't give him a table alone, so I asked him if he would mind doubling up. He said, sure. And he sat down at the table with this other fellow.
What was the other fellow like?
Just a fellow, young. I really didn't notice.
What did they talk about? I mean, at the table.
Well, I wouldn't eavesdrop.
Okay, show me the waitress.
Well, he was very fussy. I brought him the curry chicken, and he said, you call this curry chicken? And he sent it back. And then he said the mashed potatoes had lumps in them, the coffee was cold.
This was Wenzel?
Oh, no, so the other fella, the young fella, good-looking one. You couldn't do nothing to please him. Even about the ice cream, he had to say something.
What did they talk about?
Well, as near as I could get, you know, I was very busy. The young one was interested in buying property in the area, and the fat one was...
Wenzel?
I guess that's his name. Well, he kept saying that there wasn't any better land in the Lake Tahoe region, you know, like a sales talk. And the young one kept saying, well, he didn't know if he wanted to stay in this part of the country, and the fat one kept saying how he couldn't do better. He kept saying these were the choicest lot in the whole area, but I was busy. I didn't really hear what they said.
They leave together?
Well, they must have, because there they were, and when I looked the next time, there was a lady and a gentleman sitting there. I was surprised. Because the young one left a dollar. He didn't act like a tipper to me. The fat one didn't leave nothing.
The last link between the two men, the fat dead one and the thin young one, came from an associate of Wenzel's, a young man who worked with him in the real estate office.
Well, after he finished eating, I was at another table. He came over and he said, Eddie, that's my name, Eddie, I think I got a sale. And I said, gee, Mr. Wenzel, it's a funny time to be going out with a prospect. It was going on 11 o'clock. And then he said, listen, if I can't sell that boy a piece of property by moonlight, I'll eat my own necktie. And then to find the tie tied around his neck like it was, gee, he was a fine, happy, good man.
And it stops there. A rich or poor man... shot through the temple, last seen with a good-looking young prospect, period. And that's all. Nothing else shows up. But you, Frank McCullum, are a crime reporter. And for you, the case is not closed because of a theory you have. That is this. Somewhere, sometime... someone always talks about every major crime committed. That's been your experience. 12 years of it. And so, you start on your beer and listening system in the dives along Commercial Avenue, where somewhere, sometime, Someone must talk.
Have a beer, Tommy?
Whiskey.
You've got it? Tommy, this one happened 30 miles out.
31. From here to the Cal Never Ranch, 31 miles. I measured it once by car.
How'd you know what I was talking about?
He asked questions about a lot of places.
What do you know about Wenzel? I'm interested in finding out about...
Maybe you shouldn't.
Shouldn't what?
You said you was interested. Maybe you shouldn't be.
What does that mean?
Just what I said. Look, do yourself a fat favor. Save yourself trouble. And I mean big trouble. Forget about it. Now, come on, where's the whiskey?
Tommy knows. No crime within 100 miles he doesn't know about. But there's no more. He swallows his whiskey and another one and a third. But there's still no more. Just the enigmatic, maybe you shouldn't be interested. Then Sergeant Dave Peters sidles over.
Where are you going, reporter?
Oh, just walking around.
What gave you the idea you'd get any answers on the Wenzel killing here?
How did you know I was on Wenzel?
Look, let's don't spar, huh? I got other things to do. What do you know, McCullough?
Oh, I've got ideas. I've got theories, and I've got ideas.
Okay, you play it close to the chest, and so will I.
Wait a minute. I know that Wenzel wasn't rich. I know he was a four flusher. He had those lots on consignment. And if he sold them, he had a dollar, and if he didn't, he had buttons.
That much I know. I figure this prospect, the young guy, the good-looking one, he thought he had a take, but he found out he didn't have a take. Something had crossed up somewhere, and the gun went off.
And what do you know about the prospect?
Nothing. But I know this. 2 days before the killing, there was a gunman in town. I don't know where he stayed. I don't know what he did. I don't know what he was after.
That's something I heard about also.
I know this guy, the gunman, was out shopping for a .22. Now, that's the only connection. What he looks like, I don't know, and what he was after, I don't know, except he tried to get a .22.
You want to team up? What I've got, what you've got, and vice versa?
All right. You got a deal. But no stories in your paper.
A gunman and a prospect buying real estate. A .22 caliber gun. And from the way Sergeant Peters talked, and the way Tommy talked, a case that isn't very healthy to mention. And so you don't. Not to your best friend. Not to your wife. But the next morning, Tommy, whose last name nobody knows, comes over to you in another Commercial Avenue bar.
You got a loose half buck on you?
Why, sure, all the time, Tommy.
Whiskey, no chaser. So you and Sergeant Peters is a pair, hmm? You'll be getting in the gossip columns next.
How do you know?
Make that a beer, Chase. You know the Golden Light Hotel?
I've heard of it.
There's a night clerk there by the name of Addison. But like I told you before, it's something you shouldn't be interested in.
I'm not, Tommy. It's just that I'd like to get a room at the Golden Light.
You're the bad guy in here. He's like, hey, I'm going to tell you something.
That's how they always talk.
Hey, I'm going to tell you something, Fred.
Fred.
You don't mess with me. All the bad guys talk like that.
Yeah.
The good guys all talk like this, you know?
Like you?
In the radio. So I think the directors were all like, okay, let me hear you do a bad guy.
Well, all right, I can do like this, play the bad guy.
Yeah, you're perfect for that. Okay, now let me see. Yeah, you play the good guy. Hi, how are you? How's this?
You're playing yourself.
You know,
so
and then they
are
cast.
Are you a good guy?
They cast him.
Are you
I can
a good
play.
Guy?
I can play both.
Yeah.
Good guy and bad guy. Just all like this. What I want to play
kinda
the bad guy.
You kind of switch around back
when
and
I,
forth.
Well, I was in. I can't remember. I think it was in New York, and I was at one of those radio reenactments.
Yes.
And Lon Clark, who played Nick Carter, Master Detective, I think I've told the story.
Yeah.
And I
okay.
But for those out there in Radio Land that didn't hear the story, so I'm standing up at the microphone with Lon Clark as Nick Carter, and actually Charlotte Manson was there. She played Patsy Bowen, right? They're both up there. She did a great job. Lon Clark was so nice, and I played the bad guy.
See?
That he captures, and I think I went to the electric chair in this particular episode, And then I was doing it like this, you know, I was like the bad guy. And he was like, and then he captured me or whatever. I did something in the story, and I went to jail and
That's
got the electric
good.
Chair because I was
go.
A murderer.
Good for you. You did a good job.
Yeah.
You're good with
got
voices.
Got to actually do the show with Lon Clark. It wasn't broadcast. It was just for people that were there. It was a stage.
It was just for people.
It was a stage play. It wasn't like aired, you know, or anything like that. Yeah. But there was a sound effects guy, you know, off to the side. And it was a real sound effects guy. He was a guy from the golden age of radio.
We kind of did something similar to that where we did a reenactment for a group of people when we went to Woodside Ranch.
Oh, yeah. That was fun. We did that.
We were all cast. And
that was actually a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun.
And we played ping pong there. Remember?
We played ping pong.
That might have been the first time you and I ever played ping pong together.
I think it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did a reenactment.
Have you gotten any better since then?
I think I'm
have
pretty
you practiced
good.
A
I
little?
Think I'm pretty. I grew up playing ping pong.
Really?
I think I'm good.
No, you're pretty good.
I'm not bad.
You're not bad at it.
Okay.
Elif, all right, can you play any pong?
I'm pretty
pong?
Good.
I'm so good at ping
really?
Pong.
Really? Are
oh, you? You try and beat me at ping pong.
Yeah.
You got
oh,
something.
Okay.
You got something coming
mm-hmm.
for you.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go over to spin. Susan Sarandon's
Done.
Place.
Let's go to spin.
All right, let's do it.
Done.
All right,
and
let's
then
take
we'll
a break.
Show at the House of Blues.
Let's take a break. Come back.
Got the wrong guy.
And then we'll schedule a ping pong tournament between.
I say
me.
We do it at your house.
Yeah. All right. You got it. All right. Let's take a break. Then it's more after these words. That's right.
That's right.
That's right. Tony Manera. Don't touch the hair.
Yeah.
You know, I spend a lot of time on my hair, and he's got to touch my hair. Right?
Right. Hey, this is
I mean, this movie...
Changed your life.
Changed my life.
I know.
It made me think I was cool for a while.
Were
and then,
you? Maybe
no.
you were.
Yeah, but...
You dressed like him.
I mean, this movie was just like...
You know what?
Come
on. He's still
There's
cool.
some movies
he's
come
still
along.
Cool.
Right?
He's
like
still
Jaws.
Cool.
Jaws was like major.
Jaws is
The
big.
Godfather, yep. major. But I mean like that were impactful, you know?
That's true.
And Saturday Night Fever. Come yeah. on. That was impactful.
I think it hit you at the right age, too.
Yeah.
You were impressionable and you
right.
wanted to be cool. And
I was 45.
You were 45 when yeah. it came out and
right.
you still had your you know, your platform shoes and your Italian horn and your leisure suits.
Yeah, at the time that this
perfect.
Movie came out, I still had my Italian horn. I hadn't given it to that girl yet.
You could get another one if you wanted it.
It wouldn't be the same.
No,
it
would be
my,
better.
I want my horn. If she's out there listening, she knows who she is.
What's her first name?
I don't remember
oh,
her.
Oh, that's a
I don't
problem.
Remember her name. But I liked her because I gave her my Italian horn. I liked her.
Sometimes you want to go where everybody knows your name.
Right. And she's out there. She still has it, I'll bet you. She maybe she gave it to somebody else. Maybe it was
yeah.
like she regifted it.
Maybe she threw it in the garbage. Like maybe it just wasn't meaningful.
I think she just kind of hoodwinked me out of it. She was like, pretended she liked me. And then she was like, you know, if we're going to be steady, you got to give me that horn. And I gave her the horn and I never talked to her again. She never talked to me.
Yeah.
She never returned my calls.
Is this a pattern for you?
That's the only horn I ever gave.
No, is this a pattern? I mean, like the ignoring you.
No.
It seems to.
No.
No, just once in a while.
She's out there somewhere. I'm going to hunt her down. All right, so maybe I'll get this newspaper guy to track her down.
Yeah.
From this big story episode. This is called Gambling, Divorce, and Murder. Here's the conclusion to the big story.
Where would I get a 22? I don't know nothing about a 22. You think if a fella comes in here and says, get me a 22, I'll go out and get him a 22?
Look, Addison, I heard you weren't very particular.
Okay, I ain't denying it. This ain't the best hotel in town. You can get things here, sure, but guns? No, sir, that's out of my line. That's way out.
Look, let's stop kidding around. You know just what I'm talking about. I'm talking about Wenzel.
Look, you know what's the worst thing in the world to know? It's to know something about something you don't want to know. About a fella killing another fella. That's the most dangerous thing in the world to know. You ought to be glad I'm not talking to you. I've been walking around with this thing for 3 days now, and I'm going crazy with it. I don't want to know it. I don't want to talk about it. Let me alone.
What did he look like? What did the gunman look like?
I'm telling you, 3 days I'm going crazy with it. I'm not going to say another word. Don't you think I want to live too?
The information alone could frighten someone, but paralyze a man as the clerk is paralyzed. Only one thing could do that. The presence of the killer in town. And then, in a hotel bar...
He says,
You, McCullough?
Go ahead.
He says, stop talking to Peters, the cop. He says, stay away from Tommy, the stoolie.
Who says?
He says, leave Addison alone. Stay out of the golden light.
Look, stop getting mysterious.
He says, forget about it. Because he says he's watching you every single step of the way. And he says, maybe you're a smart enough reporter to want to go home to your wife and the two kids you got. One's six and one's two, ain't they? That's what he said.
You're on a case of murder, but you haven't spoken about it to anyone, not even your wife. You, Frank McCullough, reporter for the Reno, Nevada Gazette, and Sergeant Dave Peters are working together on the case, and though you keep it to yourselves, someone knows every move you make. Someone's watching you. Maybe the killer. And you just left a girl you never saw before, who told you...
He says, forget about it. Forget all about it. That's what he says.
And so, of course, you go to your partner, Dave Peters.
You're slipping, Frank.
Why?
Because obviously she knows more than she told you. And because there are ways of getting to learn what that more is, and you didn't do it.
So?
So I think I can. I'll go back to the hotel bar, and we'll find out what it is. Okay, partner?
Okay.
I can't tell you. I can't. I swear I can't. He'll kill me if I tell you.
Did you ever hear of the police department, lady? Guys don't go around killing people just like that. Now, who is he and where is he and talk? Now, you want me to go through the whole routine and arrest you for suppressing information, hindering the prosecution of justice and so on and so forth? Now, where is he?
He's up in room 204, asleep. Ludigan is his name. But please, maybe I'm stupid, but don't say it was me, huh?
All right, Ludigan, come out of it. Come out of it.
Look at his eyes, Peters. He looks coked up.
Maybe. Come on, Ludigan. Come on. Let's sit up.
Whoa, what are you doing? Take your hands off me. Leave me alone, huh?
All right, Ludigan. Where'd you get the gun?
Why don't you call me Ludigan? Is that who I am? Oh, no, it don't sound right. It don't sound right.
What are you doing? Putting on an act here?
Come on, stand up. Stand up straight. Come on, stand up.
I was walking around. Well, all of a sudden I said, you know, I don't know who I am. All of a sudden, like that. And I heard a violin playing some music somewhere. Violin. And it started to tingle all down my arms and in my legs. It began to tingle, and I said, it must be I got something to do with a violin. That's who I am. Something to do with a violin.
What are you giving?
So I went to the store, this music store, and I says, give me a violin and a bow. And I put it up my shoulder under my neck, and I started to play. And I says, please, God, let me know how to play the violin. Maybe then I'll find out who I am. But I couldn't play. Came out sour. Couldn't play a thing, not a note. Only made scratching sounds. I never found out until you just now said Ludigan. And I don't think that's right. I don't think that's who I am.
You registered in the hotel. You signed the register.
The only time I felt anything that was right was when I heard that music. And now that don't mean nothing even. Nothing. Nothing at all.
What do you think, Chris?
All right, Ludigan, sit down. Go back to sleep. Don't go anywhere. Come on, Frank.
I think he's on the level.
Me too.
But if he is on the level, then...
Then our girlfriend is giving us a beautiful line.
Oh, sure, that's what it is. She threw us Ludigan, figuring that we'd take him in. A dopey amnesia can't prove where he was, where he wasn't. Figured we'd be satisfied with him. That means...
That's right. And I'll tell you another little surprise. I talked to your friend Tommy just to make sure. You know who she is?
Who?
She's the wife of the night clerk at the Golden Light.
Well.
Only we're not going there right now. We're going to wait until it's nice and dark and late and he's sleeping. Then we'll pay him that call. The night clerk. He's off duty tonight. Put the light on, Frank.
Hey, what are you doing? What's the idea? Hey. Oh.
Yeah. Oh. That was a nice idea, Addison. Throw us a fall guy, throw us a guy who don't know who he is, and maybe we'll pick him up, and maybe that'll end the case.
Look, I tell you, you gotta believe
it. We'll believe you when you start talking about the tall, thin, handsome guy. The guy with 22. There's nobody around. We've checked. There's nobody around but two of my men. So if you want to talk quiet, that's okay, too. But talk.
You think I'm kidding, huh? About it being dangerous to know. I'm telling you, never in my life, I never meet a guy like him, and I met a lot. Ice cold. Everything he said, everything he did. Planned, careful, icy. You look in his eyes, you have to turn your face away.
All right, fine. Now let's get down to the facts.
The first thing he done was, you know about the ad in your paper that Cal Never Ranch takes for the open house?
Go on, no more stalling.
I'm not, I swear, I'm telling you. Well, he asked me about it. He turned to the page and showed me the ad and says, that was 2 days before the killing.
I think the hunting there might be better than deers, bears, and rabbits. Now get me a 22.
I never got nobody a gun before, never. But you know just to look at this guy that if you didn't do what he said...
Never mind, go on.
So I got it for him, through a guy I know, and then I didn't see him for 24 hours, and then he came back. He came back going on 1 a.m. I was all alone.
How much money you got, Addison?
Gee, I ain't got any money. What do you mean?
I'll tell you a funny story about that gun you got me. I went out to the place, the ranch, and I met this big, fat, dope Wenzel. He tells me how rich he is, all the land he owns. 5 acres there, 20 acres there. So I says, this is what I'm waiting for. He's got a fat Cadillac. He takes me out there in the moonlight to see the prize lots, and I says, all right, Pop, what do you got in your pocket? And the dumb, fat slob, he started to scream. So what can I do? He had $8 in his pocket and a bag of sweet rolls. Ain't that a laugh?
You shot him?
How much money you got? I got a 1949 Mercury downstairs. I'll leave it with you for security, because there'll probably be roadblocks anyhow. Now, how much money you got? The car is yours.
And that's the truth, Sergeant. I got it for $200 and he gave me the car. I never drove it. I never touched it.
Where is it?
It's out in the back in the garage.
License plates?
There ain't none. He made me bury him. He said, don't look at the numbers. Have you ever seen a man's face cold, icy?
All right. Let's go where you buried the plates.
You dig them up. Texas license plates. And now it's a matter of waiting. You check the plates with the Texas authorities and find his name, Martin Stevens. A record a page and a half long. Wanted for robbery, for assault, escape from prison. This man is dangerous. Everything in the book. And you wait. And then a disturbing report comes in from Houston, Texas. Martin Stevens picked up Houston, Texas today. Claims to have been in this city past 5 weeks. Corroboration by wife, local school teacher, completely reliable. Do you want extradition?
Peters, I don't get it. I don't get it at all.
Let me see that.
Unless... Dave, unless...
Yeah.
Those icy eyes. The kind of thing he made Addison do. Shouldn't be hard for a guy like that to have his own wife lie the same way.
I'm putting in for extradition right now.
He comes. Martin Stevens. Well-dressed, thin, tall, good-looking. A tolerant smile playing on his face.
I was never in Nevada. I never heard of this ranch, whatever you call it. I never stayed at the hotel on Commercial Avenue, and I don't know how to use a gun. Otherwise, I'm at your service.
The eyes are, as Addison said, absolute ice. Now warm for purposes of charming people, convincing them. So, because your experience as a reporter has helped so much, you are present when Sergeant Peters lines them up, the inexorable array of people. One after the other.
As I said before, he waited on the line because I didn't have any free tables. And then I showed Mr. Wenzel to a table. This gentleman was sitting there.
Oh, I can't make a mistake. No, sir. Him being so good-looking with that cute mustache and the way he left me a tip, it was a whole dollar bill.
Mr. Wenzel said to me, pointing to him, if I can't sell him by moonlight, I'll eat my own necktie.
It was his idea to tell the cop and the reporter that this Ludigan, the fellow who lost his mind, that he was the one who done it.
Okay, Addison, take a good look.
I don't know.
Those are bars between you. One-inch steel bars, and he's been frisked. His eyes can't do any more than look at you. Well?
He's the one. I got him the gun, and I gave him the $200, and he made me bury the plates.
Okay, Addison. Go on home and forget all about it.
Even with all that, you still won't prove it. You won't prove a thing. I spent the whole time in Texas. Houston, Texas.
I wouldn't be so sure, Stevens. I think we'll prove it fine.
And you do. The jury listens to the witnesses. The waitress, the head waiter, the business associate, the night clerk and his wife. And then they listen to the handsome man with a mustache and icy eyes. And they make a judgment. And the judgment is, as you stated. And once more, your theory is right.
Somewhere, sometime, someone always talks.
Now we read you that telegram from Frank McCullough of the Reno, Nevada Gazette.
On trial for first-degree murder, killer in tonight's big story accused the night clerk of being the murderer. But the state clinched their case by producing the murder gun which killer had pawned in Los Angeles. Killer was sentenced to life imprisonment.
And so ends another big story. In order to protect the names of people actually involved in tonight's authentic big story, the names of all characters in the dramatization were changed, with the exception of the newspaper reporter. This is the United States Armed Forces Radio Service, the voice of information and education.
I hope you enjoyed that. That's the big story, January 11th, 1950, Gambling, Divorce, and Murder. Mandel Kramer starring in that, along with Joe DeSantis, William Keane, Raleigh Bester, and the narrator was Robert Sloan. There's a picture of Robert Sloan up there. Also, the announcer on that, Ernest Chappell, started on NBC. Hope you enjoyed the big story. Let's take a break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. Make sure you sign up for our free radioclassics.com. You'll get your first email from me today. It'll be the Whistler. So just go to freeradioclassics.com, put your name and your email address, and you'll get an email from me every Monday with a classic radio show in it. And that means 52 classic radio shows you get to collect. You own it. It's sent to you. You have it. You can listen to it, stream it, or you can Bluetooth it, or do whatever you want with it.
So I know what you'll be listening to tomorrow while you're on the road.
Oh, yeah.
You'll be listening to the Whistler.
No doubt. And you know what? I save them in my – I don't delete them, so I have all the ones since we started it. And so I'll probably listen to a bunch of them. When we come back here next week, when I fly back from Florida next week – we are going to play what, Nalisa Wolf?
We are going to play Saturday night. We will play Nick Carter, Master Detective, The Burns and Allen Show, and Tales of the Texas Rangers.
That's a good lineup.
Thank you. And on Sunday, The Life of Riley, The Fat Man, and Escape, which we love around here. We play a lot of Escape because we love Escape.
It wouldn't be politically correct to call him fat anymore.
I don't think so.
It's not very nice.
How about the large man or the diplomatic man or something?
Change the name. The Fostic man.
No, I don't think that's good.
That's
either.
Not the right word. What's the right word, Nick?
Fat.
Yeah. Fat. Let's call him the
You're
fat
asking
man.
Nick.
Because he was a big guy. Big detective. Yeah. Created by Dashiell Hammett, who also created Sam Spade.
Now, if it's only fair if you have the thin man to have the fat man.
Exactly.
That's true. And that was also Dashiell Hammett, the thin man. And you know how the fat man came about? Do you know this story?
No.
He ate more than the thin man.
Oh!
Yeah.
Okay.
Hang on a second. No.
Nice.
Actually, this is what happened. So Sam Spade was a super big success on radio.
Right.
Okay. And then they went back to Dashiell Hammett. They said, all right, what else can you do for us here? And he said, well, I can take my character, the thin man, and put that on radio too. And so they did that. And then that was a super big success. So then they said, well, how about something else? And he didn't have any other detectives. So then he created the fat man for radio.
Wow.
I mean, for radio, because Thin Man, as you know, and Sam Spade, those were already in books and novels and movies and all kinds of stuff, but not the Fat Man. It was created specifically for radio. And we have an episode for you. J. Scott Smart, who was a big boy, let me tell you, he's a big boy, plays the role. So that'll be fun.
You get a vision in your mind,
right? If it's radio, the guy playing the part doesn't necessarily have to be fat.
Well, no, he doesn't. But no, you're absolutely right. But you know what? He had kind of that
fuller
sound.
Voice.
He had a fuller sounding.
Did they do that one in front of a live audience?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
They did. Yeah. And he would step on a scale. It would start out. He'd come in. He'd put a coin in the scale. He'd step, and then the announcer would be like, "There he is. He's stepping on the scale. Wait." And you hear the sound effect clink, weight 239 pounds. Who is it? Then J. Scott Smart would say, "The fat man." but it was great. Yeah. You know, these radio, there's nothing like these radio shows.
I agree.
There's nothing like them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what's on the show, Mr. DiGilio?
It's Monday, so we're going to talk about all the new movies that came out this week. We'll review those. We've got my dad's going to call in and tell a joke.
Yes.
And I don't know. I'm sure you guys are aware that they're actually going to update the tokens for Monopoly.
What? What are they going to do?
They're going to update the tokens.
Why?
Because,
You mean like the car and the battleship?
People don't
that
use
stuff?
Thimbles anymore.
Oh, I love that.
So they're going to modernize
this
them.
I kind of like
the iconic.
And they don't use like the iron, the old iron.
And the horse. And the
shoe.
The shoe.
Well,
I
people
love
still use
shoes.
Yeah, but have you seen that shoe?
Yeah, that shoe is...
No.
You don't remember what the shoe looks like?
Was it like an old shoe?
It's like very round.
It's something. It looks like something Robin Hood would wear.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And his merry men.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite piece, though? I mean, we all have a favorite piece. I was always the shoe. Yeah. That's what I was going to say. I like the shoe.
So we're going to talk about that and how they changed it.
That's interesting.
And all that stuff.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know what game I like? What board game I like? I like Clue.
Yeah, Clue's great.
Clue's a good game,
I like that one, too.
Yeah, I like that.
I loved it when I was a kid.
It's Mr. Mustard or whatever in the...
Colonel Mustard.
Colonel Mustard in the...
Did you like...
Library
I liked...
with a candlestick.
Yeah, what? I like Stratego. Do you remember that game?
Stratego's a great game.